There was a fellow who, on a Saturday morning, was looking for a parking space in a very busy mall. And he rode around and he rode around. And finally he said, "God, if you will help me find a parking space, I will stop drinking and go to church on Sunday." And sure enough, the clouds parted, the sun came out, and there was a parking space. And the guy said, "I don't need you, God, I just found one." So, the magic of your word comes from the idea of Don Miguel Ruiz in his book, The Four Agreements. And today I want to talk about a couple of those agreements, but just think about this idea of the magic of your word. In the first chapter of John is a creation story, the Gospel of John, a creation story. And it says, "In the beginning was," in many translations, "the Logos." And then it's become the Word more recently by most of the translations. The Logos means the mind. The Word does not mean the Word, like we're saying it. It means divine mind in you. And so, as we start to understand that and look at that, we know that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And we also know that the Word came into being, divine mind, and it created light within each of us. And that's the light that you are. And so this morning, as we think about the magic of the Word, think about the magic of divine mind in you. Let me take a second just to talk about that divine mind. You see, sometimes we think the mind is our brain. But it's important to distinguish between the brain and divine mind. Divine mind, from my perspective, comes from the heart space. And then it gives you direction and guidance when you listen to it. It makes it so that you're not part of the world, but you're in the world, but you're in control of your world. Because what happens is if you're thinking through the power of divine mind, you're making decisions based on what Spirit guides you to make. And then you tell your brain how to act, rather than your brain telling you how you should act. And boy, does that make a difference in our lives. Because what's happened is that through the years, and these four agreements, if I get it, there we go, you and I have been domesticated. And this is something that Don Ruiz talks about in his book, The Four Agreements. And what does it mean to be domesticated? Well, this is kind of my domestication. I think that's right. That's close. Anyway, it's how I was brought up. The earliest story I remember my mother telling about me was how compliant I was. Because she taught me that when I started walking, wobbling around a little bit, this kind of thing, stumbling around, that there were things I was not supposed to pick up. And my mother was a great housekeeper, but she wanted everything exactly as it was, in perfect shape. That was one of her desires. And she didn't get overstressed over it, but she was, paid attention to it. So the word "ought" became very important to her and to me. So when I went over to the coffee table and started to pick something up, "ought," and I learned to do this. And so "ought" became a way in which I was domesticated to behave. Also, what it did is it made me pretty compliant. More so than I probably needed to be, but when I became a teenager, I understood that I could not "ought." I didn't have to be compliant. That's when we start to grow out of our domestication. And I was very blessed in that I had parents who loved me. I had parents who domesticated me in the way that they thought was in best my best interest, who wanted the best for me. But they still were teaching me what they believed. And I had yet to mature enough to start to think about what I had to believe. Oh, I had opinions, but I didn't really know deep down inside who I was or what I believed. And I really think it's around age 30 in my day and time, maybe 40, reading that thing, that I started to really think for myself. I started to evaluate my religious teachings. I started to evaluate, because I had children, how I want to raise children versus the way I was raised. What was the difference that I'd like to be? And it wasn't a lot, but there were some. I started to get to know myself. And that took me a lot of years. I mean, in my 20s, I was one of the most defensive animals you've ever met. I could defend myself in any way that you would throw anything at me. And that came in some way from my domestication. I can't identify it totally, but it was there. Because I really wanted to show up a little bit like a hero. And I was the only person that thought I was a hero. And I began to recognize that, and to recognize it was okay. Because you see, having that hero idea, for example, I really wanted to be a great athlete. I am not a great athlete. I've never been a great athlete. But you know what I would do? I'd come home and I'd play basketball for probably 2.5 hours and spend 30 minutes on my homework at best. I spent my time doing the things that were my weaknesses, not my strengths. I had to learn about that. I mean, I could have played basketball 8 hours a day, and I would never be anything close to professional or even a high school basketball player. I got on the team, but they didn't let me play, you know? And so what happens is, as we are domesticated, we start to fit ourselves within a within a model that's within our mind of how we should show up and how we should act. Even if it's uncomfortable. Even if it isn't in our best interest. Even if it isn't even what we believe. But when we start to let go and let God, when we start to release and look within ourselves, we start to look at ourselves and we look at the man in the mirror, the woman in the mirror. When we look in the mirror, we need to really be honest with ourselves. And it can be painful at times. But what's that saying is that I need to look and say, is the divine mind, the word in me, in alignment with how I am acting? How I am showing up. That's what Don Miguel is talking about. How do I show up? And is it an alignment? If it's not, then I'm going to have some difficulty in my life. And even if it is, I'm going to have some difficult times. But they're more difficult when you're not in alignment because you don't know it. But when you step out and start to take control of your life, you then are letting Spirit guide you and direct you, and then you're asking the important questions. Am I showing up based on who I should be and what I am? Not should be. That's not a good word. Based on what I am, the I am in me. Is that how I'm showing up? And when I'm not, what do I do about it? Well, one of the ways to show this is to remember this phrase. Most of us, well, some of us, remember this guy, Flip Wilson, okay? He was a big guy on TV, a great comic. And he used to say what? Right, the devil made me do it. That's a funny statement. But you know what it does if you take it seriously? It causes you to be irresponsible with your word. Be irresponsible to yourself. Because if that is my philosophy, then then what happens is I get lost in that, and all of a sudden, I become the biggest victim anybody can become. The devil made me do it. Basically says, it's not my fault. It's not my responsibility. And it's somebody else's problem. It's somebody else's issue when it might be mine. And so as we start to think about that, we start to look at these couple of agreements. The first one he talks about, we're going to talk about two today. The first one he talks about is being impeccable with your word. Now, the other night when I was teaching a class, I really didn't get this right. Just so you guys know, okay, I don't think I got it right. But one of the people in the class got it right, because he said your word and your action are one and the same. And that was really the message. That's what he's saying here. When you're impeccable with your word, what you're doing is you're allowing the word, divine mind, to guide and direct you, and when you don't do that, you're out of sorts with universal law. You're out of sorts with yourself, and you certainly get out of sorts with others. But we can manage that, because what we can do is say yes or no to something. Oh, by the way, there's nothing wrong with saying no. Even if the minister asks you to do something, it's okay to say no, and it's okay to say yes. And you don't even have to explain yourself, by the way, when you do that. It's just okay. Now, if you say that to me, I'm going to say, why? Then you can say, that's none of your business. Okay, all right, good, see? That's an honest comment. So what happens is that by being impeccable with my word, I am now living life in such a way that I am free. I am truly free to show up as not Richard Bunch, not the ego bunch, but the divine bunch. And when I do that, the world works for me. And I think it works for others. Because we are all one. To be impeccable with our word is to be in oneness with each and every person that I meet and see. No matter what they say to me, no matter how they treat me, no matter what they think about me, I can be in oneness. And I can learn to take constructive criticism. And I can learn to give, in a positive way, constructive criticism without judgment. Is that possible? I think so. Because when I am, and you are, honest with somebody, and you're thinking about their best interests and not yours, then what happens is they feel that, you see, they understand that, and they take that on and they're willing to listen. But when I get to the point where I go to this point, okay, don't take anything personally, if I do not take anything personally, then another person will not take it personally. I truly believe that. Because they will feel and sense what we're talking about. And it's okay, with permission, to share, not judge, one another. When we are taking things personally, we are doing it through the power of judgment. We're allowing ourselves to be judged by somebody else that may not even understand or know what we've been through. My father didn't finish college, he did not finish high school. He went in the Army, and he was there for 4 years at Fort Monroe. And then what happened is he went into the Marine Corps during World War II. So the first eight of his young years, he was in the service. He got an education, he said, but it wasn't the one you wanted. And at the same time, when he came back, what he did is he finished his high school diploma and he took what they called a correspondence course. He did not feel like he had the time, and as he said, he didn't think he had the ability to go to college. He really did. He just didn't know it. And so what happens is we start to take on with ourselves that domestication if we're not careful. Dad didn't think he was smart enough to go to college. Interesting enough, I didn't think I was smart enough to get anything much above a C. Wonder where that came from. And see how that domestication can take effect. And so at some point in my life, I learned that I was college material. It was a little after college, actually, okay? But I learned I was college material. Because nobody would have convinced me I would have gotten my master's when I came out of college. I was just glad to get out. And yet, I needed it and learned that I could do it. And so we can overcome these things that are getting our way, but at the same time, what we have to do is remember that anything anybody says to us, we do not take personally. And it's hard to do if you really know them. If my wife says something to me that hurts my feelings, I'm taking it personally. But if somebody else that I just met said the same thing to me, I wouldn't take it personally. So a lot of it is, what weight do I put on what the person that's maybe speaking out to me in a way that I'm not appreciative of, okay? Which happens to all of us from time to time, especially in close relationships. And what we have to learn to do, I believe, even with the closest relation, is say, tell me more. What do you mean by that? Because I know my wife will never say anything to me to hurt me. I don't always remember that, but I know it to be the truth. And that what she's pointing out is not something that's wrong with me, but something I can do better. When you're at work, let people guide you and direct you, even if you think it might hurt your feelings. And the way you do that is, this is work-related. I can be better at this. Everybody can be better at this. And this person is trying to teach me to do that. When somebody in your life comes along that you feel is difficult to get along with, try to understand their story. I may have told this before, I'm not sure, but when I was in El Paso, there was a fellow that was a real good friend of mine, and he was on the finance team. And we were not great, but we were rebuilding. I mean, we had $24 in the bank when I took over. You don't take over companies that have $24 in the bank, okay? But I did, because I was called to it. And by the time he got on the finance team, things were pretty good. We had good income. We were in the black. But he always talked about us going bankrupt. It would come up at just about every finance team meeting. We're going to go bankrupt if you keep doing this. And I reacted to it. I took it personally, because I took the church finances personally. I learned over time not to do that, but I did them. And one day, and it may have been after reading this book, I sat down with Dick and I said, tell me why you feel like we're going to go bankrupt. And he said, well, I've run three businesses and all three have gone bankrupt. I said, son of a gun, to myself. Now I know why he thinks the church, and he's projecting that on the church because of his past experience. Don't have to take that personal. It's just his stuff, right? So what we learn to do is not take it personally. We learn to step away and to be able to say to ourselves that we are in control of our mind. We listen to our heart. We step up. And if something is said to us, we don't take it personally. We learn from it. We learn from it, or we learn more about the other person. Because nobody has the same life. Not one of us sitting in here has had all the same experiences. Some of you shared your experiences with me. and I am so impressed with how you've changed your life. And so, knowing that none of us have the same experiences, when somebody says something to me, who is it coming from? It's coming from their experience, not my experience. And if I understand that, I can accept what they're saying without being offended. I think that's what unity teaches us. That's what oneness means. We can share with each other, we can be honest with each other, but we do it based on love. We do it based on the light that we want to be for one another. We do it because that's what Jesus taught us. I mean, Jesus wasn't the simplest guy in the world, and he certainly was tough, tough-minded. You know, love your enemies, love yourself. We all have God within us. The Father's in me and in you and in us, paraphrased. All of those things were against the core of what people believed in that day and time, and still goes against the core of what some people believe, even though Jesus said it, different interpretations. So you and I have this opportunity to take these two agreements, be impeccable your word, and don't take anything personally, and allow that thought process to move within us, and I'll guarantee you it will open your life and change your life. And isn't that what we all want to do? God bless. So now let's go to this time of meditation. A time where we take just a moment to go deeper. Breathe in. And see yourself breathing in the light that you are. And now breathe out. And see the world. See those around you feeling your light, the warmth of your light. Stay in that light. And allow that light to be your guide. Allow that light to heal you. Whatever needs healing. Allow that light to be you as you walk through this week. And now let's just take a moment to sit in the light. Through this light, look in your mirror and behold the light that you are, and so it is. Namaste.
To be an expression of your unfolding peace. Show, Spirit, show through me as I open up to be an expression of your